Hello, America, and to all our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another installment of Let's Weekend, another exciting episode, and in this case, somewhat post-comatose because it's after Thanksgiving. Wow. Yeah, I am your host of the most, Brandon Perkins. Always with me is Chris Solochi. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so it is 11/26/2022. That is November 26, 2022. It is the day after Thanksgiving. Well, technically the day after day Thanksgiving. And I think I'm still kind of recovering from it. Yeah, so this week ended up being far more eventful than I thought it was going to be. We had not one, but two mass shootings happen this week. One of them is the direct result of all the awful rhetoric against the queer community that the right wing has been using, and the other is just another example of America having far too lax gun laws. It was obviously terrible, but there were some heroes that came out of them, and we will be discussing them. We also do have a few, you know, regular stories as well. But more than anything, it was mostly just, you know, America sort of crowding around, getting absolutely food and wine drunk, and then hopefully not getting into fistfights with their relatives over politics. But yeah, before we get to all that stuff, we do, of course, have to talk about things we were doing this week, including Thanksgiving. And as always, we'll start with Chris. Chris, what were you doing this week, you know, other than Thanksgiving?
Been mostly working.
Yeah.
I've had the past few days off, so that's been nice.
Mm-hmm.
But doing a lot of work the last week, so haven't had a ton of time to really do things I would like to do, but
mm-hmm.
I've been doing stuff. The big things, I got some Blu-rays for Black Friday,
mm-hmm.
A bunch of them. One of them I managed to watch, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, the Nick Cage movie about Nick Cage doing a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
But not very good movies, and gets an opportunity to take a job sort of entertaining for mm-hmm. Some rich person, often I think Spain or something like that. That is played by Pedro Pascal, and comes to find out that, oh, this is a big like drug kingpin,
mm-hmm.
and the CIA manages to catch up with him and sort of recruit him in their quest to mm-hmm. take him out and all that, as he is sort of torn on that because he's found out this guy is somebody he likes a lot
mm-hmm.
as a friend, and the idea of turning on him and all that, a thing that wears on him a lot. So,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, it ends up being a really fun and ridiculous movie. That is a lot of fun. Definitely worth checking out whenever you can, especially because there's like an internal Nick Cage that yells at him a lot throughout the movie.
Yeah.
There's like has a younger face,
mm-hmm.
a younger version of him called Nicky Cage or something like that.
Yeah.
That loves to yell at him all mm-hmm. the time whenever he... Where he's doing things that aren't in his supposed best interest.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a fun movie. The other thing I watched is Wednesday, mm-hmm. the new Addams Family series on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
That is directed by Tim Burton or produced by Tim Burton, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. They put his name all over it. But this is sort of a solo thing with just Wednesday in it. Her parents and her brother and some of the other characters show up from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
But this is sort of mostly about Wednesday, who is sort of on her latest school, having, you know, gotten herself kicked out of mm-hmm. a bunch of other schools, and goes to Nevermore Academy, mm-hmm. a school for outcasts that her parents both went to. Love a lot. But she starts to notice right away that there's something going on here that isn't on the up and up, and tries to figure out what it is, potentially ties into some violent killings that have been happening in the nearby town of Jericho,
mm-hmm.
that she is trying to figure it all out, and at the behest of most of the adults, kind of trying to tell her that she is, you know, seeing things or whatever. That makes her very much suspicious
mm-hmm.
of their potential involvement in whatever is going on, as well as all the sort of dark history of her family and the academy and the town and all that.
Mm-hmm.
All sorts of things that she gets into. And yeah, Jenna Ortega does a good job
mm-hmm.
in that role. And I had to look it up, and she is 20 years old, but she is 5'1". So she like is shorter than a lot of the characters in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wait, isn't she in her 20s? And like, yeah, she's 20. She's unfortunately 5'1", very short.
Mm-hmm.
So she fits the role pretty well. But yeah, that's a show people should definitely check out. I would kind of almost liken it to the Sabrina the Teenage Witch series that Netflix did as well. Being one that's also very kind of dark and comedic and all that kind of stuff that people liked a lot. So yeah, it's a pretty fun show. So, and that's kind of the only Addams Family thing I've ever really enjoyed. The other stuff has been like, eh, it's okay. But nothing really caught my eye like this one has. So
mm-hmm.
hopefully they do some more stuff. Because they definitely set up for, I don't know, something to happen. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, that's a good show. For games, been playing more God of War Ragnarok. Mm-hmm. I'm almost about 10 hours into it now.
Mm-hmm.
So liking it a lot still. Just working mm-hmm. my way through more of what it's doing mm-hmm. and enjoying it a lot. So don't really want to say any spoilers or anything there, but yeah, they've introduced like a new puzzle mechanic mm-hmm. that they use a lot in the second area I'm at. And there's a point where another character you're hanging out with
mm-hmm.
is like, I'll just save you the trouble on this one, and just moves the thing around. So it makes it a lot easier for you.
Mm.
It's like, oh, this, okay. They kind of get to that. They're putting a lot of puzzles in here, and just has this character just like, oh, I will solve this for you.
Mm.
Kind of thing. So yeah, looking forward to playing some more of that. Been playing more Tinykin, kind of got back into that since I hadn't finished it when I was playing it earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, finished up the fifth and sixth worlds, or fourth and fifth, I forget which numbers they are, but I finished up those two to kind of get to the last area, I think,
mm-hmm.
Before I can actually finish the game.
Mm-hmm.
So looking forward to finishing that up, and I'm hoping at some point here that they open up and give me like a some sort of like shortcut thing that tells me like, oh, here's where all the last little collectibles are at.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of you having to search every nook and cranny, because there's a couple areas where I'm have just little enough that it's kind of annoying to try to get everything. But I'll see what that, if they address any of that versus I don't know how I'd look up a guide for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause one collectible that usually gives you like 8 to 1200 in a stage, and those are real annoying to try to find all of them. But yeah, that's one I've been enjoying a lot. Still in Rocket League. Mm-hmm. Still playing that. Working my way through this event, which has me playing a lot of... basically asks you to play like 5 of every mode in the game that isn't the very basic competitive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that each of the 4 casual modes and the 4... extra modes, play 5 matches of all of those. So working my way through that. Still has about another week to go on that, so no real pressure. But yeah, that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Brandon?
As for me, I am still playing Persona 5 Royal, and I've actually am now very much in the new content that they made specifically for this version. Not going to necessarily spoil it, but basically what happens is one of the new characters that they introduce, you would think, does indeed end up being central to it, but not necessarily in a way you would think. It's surprisingly nuanced and weirdly like deconstructive of sort of like the whole concept of the God of Control that is like the original main enemy of the first game. Really unique stuff. I gotta admit, it's actually pretty cool. I'll also say that part of the game is also not significantly, but definitely a lot more challenging than much of the earlier parts of the game. The enemies are a lot stronger. There's a lot more of them. And they are, like, a lot of them are, like, very, very durable to, like, physical attacks. And some of them are very durable to, like, half of the spells that you can use. So it's requires a lot of thinking ahead and a lot more strategy than up to that point that you normally had to use. But yeah, all in all, good stuff. Good stuff. And the other game I started playing recently and have found myself absolutely just kind of obsessing over is Vampire Survivors, which is free on the Game Pass, so you can play it anytime. God, how to describe this game? So essentially, somebody sort of sold it to me like this. It's a twin stick shooter where one of the sticks has been removed. So it's literally just you, your only like thing you have to worry about is moving around your character or your little, you know, which is, you know, it's, well, I'll get to that, but all of the characters that you can play as, and you get like more and more of them as the game goes on. Some of them, you know, as you get more powerful, some of them you have to actively look for, but they all basically start off with one particular kind of attack. And some of them, especially some of the later ones, will usually have like some sort of like boost or something to them that they start off baseline with. And essentially, this game is very much like Castlevania obsessed. In fact, I'm pretty sure when this game first came out on Steam, there were actually some, like in its beta forms, it was actually using like graphics that had been ripped straight from Castlevania at some point. But yeah, like even the first couple of characters that are available are basically like the characters from the from Castlevania 3. Including one that's literally just straight up a rip off of Simon Belmont. You know, over time you get more characters and basically you get put into originally what starts off as like a infinite scrolling, like a field. And then it goes to like a library that infinite scrolls from like the right and left. And then there's like a mine or a factory and it goes on. And essentially what you're trying to do is you are trying to move around while your attacks happen automatically, like every couple of seconds. And you're trying to get as many enemies as you can so that when you kill these enemies, some of them will give you these blue crystals. And those blue crystals are what you use to upgrade. And it starts off like with a meter up at the top, and the meter tells you how many you need until the next upgrade. And so you start off with, like, say, start off with the Simon Belmont ripoff. He just has his whip attack. And then over time, you know, he can get things like, you know, garlic, which is essentially like a deadly force field that you put around yourself that can, like, insta-kill some of the weaker ones, but requires a couple more hits for the stronger ones. There's another whip that you can get, so you can end up whipping in like both directions, both right and left, You can also get a lot of the like very basic sort of Castlevania-esque type weapons, like the throwing axe and the cross and the Bible that sort of hovers. The Bible that sort of hovers around you, the blue potions that do blue fire, very basic stuff. And then as it goes on, you can upgrade these various items, and you get make them stronger, make them work faster, so that instead of activating every couple of seconds, it activates every second. And at some point, if you get far enough, you'll start getting like evolved versions of some of them so that they're like twice as strong as the other ones. And yeah, that's literally like what the base game is. It's you moving around trying to get these crystals strong enough so that you can take out just waves and waves and waves of enemies without much effort. And every time I play it, it keeps getting surprisingly more and more in-depth. And yeah, it's extremely addictive. It's not really necessarily unique. I know there's a lot of games that are kind of like this, where it's like you got the generic pixel character moving around a field doing automatic attacks and stuff like that. But this one is far superior to the other one, simply due to the fact that it's just better engineered. You know, there's a lot more depth to it. There's a lot more going on underneath the surface. And it's just fun in general. Chris, have you played it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, is that more or less your same opinion?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Fun game. Let's see, but that's it for games. Some other stuff I've been doing. Reading, as usual. The one I've been reading this book, it's a science fiction novel by Chohei Kambayashi. It's a Japanese book. It was the inspiration for like an anime series that did okay. It's called Yukikaze, and it's basically somebody sold it to me as, imagine if Philip K. Dick wrote a military science fiction story. And that's more or less what it is. It's essentially it's got kind of like a pulpish sort of sci-fi plot that internally, because of, you know, the way Philip Dick does stories, it kind of, and Kambayashi very much does much of the same. It's sort of twists in on itself so that sort of like reality and truth and humanity sort of goes into like this eternal loop. Essentially what the story is that at some point in the near future, this dimensional rift opens up over the Arctic Circle, and out of it flies this, what appears at first to be more or less these machine-generated things called the JAM. That's what they call them. And so the United Nations puts together an air force, and that air force manages to drive the JAM back through the dimensional rift. And they themselves go and follow them through the rift, and they emerge on the other side on this, what looks like otherwise uninhabited planet that they eventually called Planet Fairy. And basically, they end up starting a new branch of the military that the United Nations specifically placed in Fairy to keep the JAM away from reinvading the Earth. So by the time the story starts, it's been going on for over 30 years at this point. And the people there that are working there, you know, it's not an easy job because the JAM are very crafty and they are legitimately good fighters. So the plane, you know, being a fighter pilot for this particular force doesn't have the longest lifespan. And among these is a guy named Rei Fukai, who pilots the eponymous plane Yukikaze. Now, the thing about Yukikaze is, unlike all the other planes, Yukikaze is actually piloted mostly by a neural implant and a artificial intelligence. And it does not actually fight in any of the battles. Its sole purpose is to watch and gather data from each fight so that when it comes back, it can then use that data to help, you know, create better battle plans against the jam. But then what happens is that things start to kind of break down. By the time one of the like main guys in the story like takes a sort of R&R vacation back to Earth, he realizes that because it's been so long, a lot of people have gotten to the point where they don't think the invasion ever actually happened. They think it was like a hoax or something. And then once he gets back, he starts seeing people that were supposedly dead suddenly showing up again. And it then comes out that apparently the jam have started cloning humans and have started like replacing people that people had previously thought dead. And it gets weirder from there. It's legitimately great. I will admit it can be kind of slow in places. Kobayashi mentions in the postscript that he was really into airplanes at the time, and it really shows when he's writing this, because he does spend a inordinate amount of time on the finer details of aviation. But it's definitely worth reading. It really is fascinating reading. And I'm hoping to get the sequel, which is Good Luck, Yukikaze, which unfortunately, there's like four books that have been published, but only the first two are available in English. So, you know, I'll get to that eventually. Let's see. Other than that, well, I'm getting ready to start writing my Christmas list for this year. I really am not sure if I still want a PS5 right now or not. You know, I've been looking on like Best Buy and stuff like that for like the PS5s. They're still kind of hard to get a hold of. And you know, it's just right now there's really not a whole lot about them that I want. You know, like obviously there are a few games I want to play for that system, but most of them I can get on my Xbox or on my Switch. So, you know, I don't really know. I do know that I do want some Switch games. I know that I want Xenoblade Chronicles 3, because every freaking body and their mother that has been playing that game have been preaching its awesomeness like to hell and back. And I'm like, you know, I loved the first Xenoblade Chronicles. I liked the second Xenoblade Chronicles. It wasn't as good as the first one was. But apparently the third one might very well be the best of the three. So need it bad. But yeah, I'm also thinking of getting like a vinyl player, because I'm wanting to start a vinyl collection. Yeah, other than that, it's mostly just me surviving Thanksgiving. Which, by the way, Chris, did you do Thanksgiving with the family, or were you having to work?
I did Thanksgiving.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, had food and all that.
Awesome. So unfortunately, you know, it's been a while since, you know, my Thanksgiving has been like a big, big event like it used to be. I've told stories about how when I was younger, we used to go up to this little farmhouse in Chauncey, Georgia, where like the whole part of like my mom's side of the family and some of my dad's side of the family would show up. You know, it's a lot of people have moved out since then, moved away. So it's mostly just me, my aunt and uncle, my cousins, my mom and dad, and my grandma. But I mean, that's all well and good, right? Fortunately enough, very little politics was actually discussed. I don't know if that's just a sign of the times, or if they generally just don't really care all that much anymore. But in some ways it's kind of sad. And in some other ways it's kind of bittersweet. But, you know, it's a lot of my family's still around and I still get to do it. And that in and of itself is, you know, a bit of a blessing, I guess. Anyway, That was what I was doing this week. So, Chris, you have anything you want to add before we move on?
I do want to mention that on PlayStation Direct, they have PS5s right now.
Yeah.
The God of War Ragnarok bundles.
Yeah.
Those might be around for a bit, so
might be
a good opportunity to grab one.
Yeah. Yeah, might be is the sort of optimal term there. But
I mean, if I could get on the site right now in the middle of Black Friday weekend, they're like, yeah, sure, absolutely. You can get one. I'm pretty sure they're going to be available for a little bit.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, so moving on from there, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today I wanted to sort of briefly talk about probably one of the most infamous political figures of the 20th century, since we've been spending a lot of time up until recently about the gaming side of the world. And I thought it's time that maybe it was time to talk about something more serious. And so this week, we're talking about probably the guy who, like, was so toxic that he inadvertently became the eponymous name for one of the worst type of excesses of American politics. That is the late infamous Senator Joseph McCarthy. Now, Chris, you've heard the term McCarthyism before, right? Obviously you have. It's like one of the most widespread known terms in American politics, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, obviously Joseph McCarthy is the reason that goes from. And probably one of the great ironies about McCarthy is that outside of that, he was an extremely mediocre politician. Was also very much an example of a person who was like the biggest like ladder climber of an individual who just he had no real like actual dreams and goals other than getting power and wealth for himself. He was what you would call he was a ladder climber. He was a veteran of World War II. He ended up joining the Marines because he thought this would be helpful for a future political career. He then went back after the war to be a judge, where he would like wear his Marine uniform while he was on the bench, which I'm pretty sure is considered highly unethical today. He also became good pals with Joe Kennedy Sr., who you may know as the father of the Kennedy clan, specifically Jack Kennedy, his brother Bobby, and all of them. In 1946, he ran for the Senate for the first time. He used the slogan "Congress needs a tail gunner," which, for the record, was totally bullshit because McCarthy was not a tail gunner. He was an intelligence officer. He only flew as an observer and had only fired the tail guns of the planes because he either, you know, was in a situation where they had to, or more often than not, he just wanted to fire it because he wanted to play soldier. He ended up defeating his opponent, Robert M. La Follette Jr. And then he went on to defeat his Democratic opponent, Howard McMurray. Now, we see sort of the hints of who McCarthy would come during his time during the Republican primary. He lambasted La Follette for not enlisting during the war, even though he was, you know, 46 at the time of the Pearl Harbor attack, meaning he was sort of out of the age range of people they were taking. He even went so far as to accuse him of being a war profiteer, even though, you know, he just owned parts of a radio station. And McCarthy himself invested in the stock machine with money, making a profit of $42,000 in 1943. And weirdly enough, this is where it gets really weird, because you know where McCarthy got some of his early support from back then? A trade union that was partly controlled by the Communist Party USA. Because at the time, they were trying to get rid of his opponent, La Follette Jr., who, on top of being a fairly progressive Republican, was also rabidly anti-communist. During the Malmedy massacre, which was a World War thing that happened during World War II by members of the Waffen-SS, well, McCarthy, after that happened, McCarthy's career as a self-appointed ultra-patriot got off to a strange start by defending the soldiers on trial for it. Now, okay, you could say, okay, everybody deserves a fair trial, and they deserve the defense as much as anybody else. It's just kind of weird when you consider what his future career would be like. So, okay, all of this is happening. You got all these little bits, you know, sort of building the foundation. So when does McCarthy become the individual we all know him as? Well, that happens in 1950. McCarthy gave a speech to the Republican Women's Club of Wheeling, West Virginia on February 9, 1950. So up to this point, you have to know that in the late 40s, tensions were kind of high between the two great superpowers. The Soviet Union had, as had sometimes been called, thrown up a quote-unquote iron curtain between themselves and the capitalist West. China had undergone its civil war, and the communists had come out on top, and people in America, or at least its power structure, had started to fear that they and the Soviets would be buddy-buddies and gang up on the rest of the world. Then, of course, in 1949, the Soviets test detonated their own atomic bomb, which meant that for the first time, the United States was no longer the sole atomic superpower on the world stage. So, as you can expect, it meant that we were going to be in for yet another Red Scare. Yes, this another Red Scare. This was not the first Red Scare. There had actually been another Red Scare shortly during and after World War I, but that's another story for another day. So McCarthy started his speech by contrasting the Soviet Union with the quote-unquote Christian West. Now, at this time, for Alger Hiss, a guy who had been actually, as it later turned out, was in fact a spy for the USSR, had been convicted of perjury for lying about his spying and passing off documents to a guy named Whitaker Chambers. Chambers is also an interesting figure because he was also a communist who at some point either became sort of, he may have become disgruntled with the Soviet Union, or maybe he was a clout chaser, but he was also a deeply in the closet homosexual, and he had decided to go all Jesus. And anyway, it was this Chambers guy who had ended up sort of blowing the whistle on the whole thing. But it gets deeper than that because, see, at the time, there was another, you may have heard of him, his name was Richard Milhouse Nixon, who was taking the Alger Hiss case and basically making it seem like the United States was under attack from something so insanely terrible and spread in scope that everyone was ready to make, like, the Boston Tea Party. And then came McCarthy and his little speech. So what did he do with his speech? Well, the first thing was he gave the bad news, which was that America was, quote unquote, losing. And I'm going to quote, 6 years ago, there was within the Soviet orbit 180 million people. Lined up on the anti-totalitarian side, there were in the world at that time roughly 1,625 million people. Today, only 6 years later, there are 800 million people living under the absolute domination of Soviet Russia. He's obviously counting China here, which, as anybody who knows history, China and the Soviet Union would actually not get along very well and would eventually split into rival camps, but that's neither here nor there. On our side, this figure has shrunk to around 500 million. In other words, in less than 6 years, the odds have changed from 9-1 in our favor to 8-5 against us. How could this happen? McCarthy had the answer. Quote, as one of our outstanding historical figures once said, when a great democracy is destroyed, it will not be from enemies from without, but rather because of enemies from within. And who were these enemies from within? The reason that we find ourselves in a position of impotency is not because of our powerful potential enemy has sent men to invade our shores, but rather because of the traitorous actions of those who have been treated so well by this nation. It has not been the less fortunate or members of minority groups who have been traitorous to this nation, but rather those who have had all the benefits that the wealthiest nation on earth has had to offer. the finest homes, the finest college education, and the finest jobs in government we can give. And then, at the very end, he got super specific. This is glaringly true in the State Department. There, the bright young men who are born with silver spoons in their mouths are the ones who have been most traitorous. I have here in my hand a list of 205, a list of names that were made known to the Secretary of State as being members of the Communist Party and who nevertheless are still working and shaping policy in the State Department. And with that, it was on. He started making these accusations several times to anybody who would make it. His numbers would change. He would claim at various times that there were 87 people to 51 people to just 10 people, all of them communists in the State Department, but never actually proved a single case thereof. He initially based his list on a report from 1946 assessing security risk among employees within the U.S. government. He neglected to mention that, A, the term security risk was a pretty broad term, meant to include not only political undesirables, but people suspected of incompetence, carelessness, or unreliability, and B, the vast majority of those so named had either been fired or voluntarily resigned long before 1950. He also plagiarized large portions of his speech verbatim from an address that had been given by, you guess it, Richard Milhouse Nixon just a few weeks prior. And, of course, Nixon himself was not entirely happy about that. So then, and all of a sudden, accusations started going everywhere, especially in Hollywood, where a bunch of actors, directors, producers, and production help had their careers more or less ruined within the United States due to backstabbing, informing, and, of course, backstabbing and blacklisting. The most infamous of all of these was, of course, Ronald Reagan, head of the Screen Actors Guild at the time, who eventually got himself elected president through his anti-union activities and fingering fellow actors as communists. Yep. Now, if you're wondering, okay, how did he go with all this shit? Okay, he couldn't have done this all. Well, he didn't. Over at the time, he would start to assemble a sort of team of all types of oddballs and miscreants. Probably one the most infamous of all of these was a guy named Roy Cohn, who was, much like Whitaker Chambers, a very closeted gay man and also a mob lawyer. He would become sort of McCarthy's infamous sort of right-hand man who would dig up a lot of dirt on people, you know, sort of insult and just overall just do terrible shit. It probably wouldn't surprise you to know that Roy Cohn's most famous student was none other than Roger Stone. Yeah, that Roger Stone. And a little guy you've probably never heard of named Donald J. Trump. Yep, that guy too. So, among McCarthy's various sort of targets, and probably his best known target, was a guy named Owen Lattimore, who was a historian and travel writer who had sympathies towards Mao Zedong, who of course would eventually become Chairman Mao, and had criticisms to his, you know, nationalist rival and enemy, Chiang Kai-shek, and he blamed Chiang Kai-shek specifically for China's fall to communism. Now, Lattimore never held a government post, and he was never even proven to actually be a communist, but he did occasionally advise the State Department, and that was good enough for old McCarthy. He called him a leading Soviet agent and architect of our Far Eastern policy, though that was nowhere near true. He eventually had to undergo 2 years of investigations, several hearings. He was then indicted for perjury, and then had a judge dismiss them because he considered them unsubstantiated, and they were. But probably the big one that really became most infamous and most sensational came in 1951 when he attacked George Marshall, who at the time was the Army Chief of Staff during World War II and the Secretary of State under Harry S. Truman. He accused Marshall of being part of what he termed, quote, a conspiracy so immense as to dwarf any such previous venture in the history of man. McCarthy's attack on Marshall was widely ridiculed, but this did little to dampen his power within Washington. Basically, it got to the point where if McCarthy pointed the finger, it could basically end you as a human being. And of course, I mentioned Roy Cohn. Cohn basically spurred a lot of these investigations that McCarthy would find himself ahead of. But, you know, basically it got bad. McCarthy sort of created this incredibly frightening atmosphere of suspicion basically everywhere. People were looking for reds under the bed. When the 50s are generally sort of seen as like the most rabidly infamous time for red baiting and anti-communist hysteria, McCarthy is the reason why. But it wasn't the last, because eventually McCarthy would step on too many toes. And finally, it got so bad that during became what happened or known. Well, what happened is what are now known as the Army McCarthy hearings. And this was his downfall, because he had started in, you know, actively insulting members of the U.S. military and the State Department. Finally, people just could not take it anymore. The hearings actually happened in front of a live television audience. And this is the point where during a particularly tenuous hearing where they were essentially trying to prove the disloyalty of this young State Department staff member, a guy named the special counsel for the army, a man named Joseph Welch, finally stood up and said, "Mr. McCarthy, have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency?" And once it was over, it was a rousing applause that he received. And that was it. McCarthy was censured by the Senate. He eventually would lose his Senate seat, and he would basically die in 1957 from hepatitis, possibly exacerbated by alcoholism. He did not, however, he did still have some very fanatical followers even to this day. There are still people like, say, Ann Coulter, who try to claim that he was actually right along. He was not. None of the people he, of all the people that he named as Soviet spies, not a single one of them ever became one. There were Soviet spies in the United States State Department, but none of them were ever identified by McCarthy. Even to his dying day, he still had people like the John Birch Society who would keep up the whole sort of anti-communist hysteria conspiracy shit pretty much to its illogical extremes, pretty much to this day, unfortunately. They're still around. Some of them even began claiming that President Eisenhower was himself a communist agent. But eventually, he, you know, met his downfall, and he sort of both began and ended a very ugly chapter in American political history. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. All right, so moving on from there, it is now time for the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we must start off with our assholes of the week. And of course, our chief asshole of the week is the fat fuck who went into the Club Q, an LGBTQ nut club in Colorado Springs, murdered 5 people, and wounded 18 others.
Yeah.
We're going to mention this. It could have been worse, but there were some heroes that ended up stopping it, and we'll be getting to them. But, yeah.
Yeah. This man went into Club Q minutes before midnight. That was going to be when the day turned over. It's the Trans Day of Remembrance.
Mm-hmm.
So probably not a coincidence at all in that. Mm-hmm. It looks like the number of injured has increased to 25,
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately. But yeah, this person went in, started shooting right away, mm-hmm. To the point that caused a lot of people to freak out. Obviously, mm-hmm. This is a club that was definitely considered a safe space for the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty popular club.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, there were a couple of people that managed to stop him mm-hmm. fairly quickly within a few minutes of him starting, mm-hmm. To keep the number of dead so small.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the amounts of people that were injured in this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a lot of baggage from this person that mm-hmm. we've got other stories here for where this person may have come from.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go over to the next story.
Yeah, so who this guy was. So we don't have it listed, but I'll go ahead and just... his grandfather is a Republican politician.
Well, I was going to get to that here.
We're going to get to that. We talked
about his family. So, yeah.
Yeah. His dad... Yeah. But the guy himself had already made a mother last year that resulted in no charges because the records had been sealed.
Yeah. Threatened his mother with a homemade bomb, forcing neighbors in surrounding homes to evacuate while the bomb squad and crisis negotiators talked him into surrendering.
Mm-hmm.
That should have easily put him in the realm of triggering Colorado's red flag laws.
Mm-hmm.
But then something weird happened that seemed to potentially involve his grandfather, a California council member.
Mm-hmm. I forget
which area he might have been in, but you wouldn't be surprised that he is a Trumper.
Mm-hmm.
For that, the grandfather seemed to potentially get involved, use some favors and whatnot, and got the DA to essentially get this case sealed, to essentially remove it from existence, other than, you know, people being able to look up stories of
mm-hmm.
what this person did about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was June 2021. And yeah, unfortunately, these potential charges and such were sealed and essentially mm-hmm. rendered to have not existed. Mm-hmm. That let him be free to, before shooting up this club, you know, acquire mm-hmm. an AR-15 and ammo, mm-hmm. pistol and some other stuff. He had full gear on, armor mm-hmm. and all that. I believe a helmet as well, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, he was able to be fully prepared for this.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's just kind of an awful thing
mm-hmm.
to see here, where it's like a clear case that could have been potentially prevented if not completely prevented, if they had charged him with these threats and put him in jail where he belongs. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think also potential charges of hate crimes, to which his lawyers and Republicans are saying, oh, he's non-binary and all this. And it's like,
yeah, that was an obvious like troll move.
Yeah. I don't know how true that is. He did change his name at some point.
Yeah.
That's why his dad has a different last name than he does. Or
yeah.
And all that. But that's like, I don't know. That seems awfully convenient. But also, yeah. He's killed enough people and injured enough others. He's going to go to prison for the rest of his life either way.
Mm-hmm.
The hate crime law is not going to change anything in this.
Yeah. Yeah. And so eventually they managed to track down this dude's dad. And yeah, let's just say that this guy had no chance of ever being. Wow. So his dad is a guy. His dad is a guy named Dick Delaware, who is a Mormon. Well,
his name is Aaron Brink.
Yeah, but his
Dick Delaware is his porn name.
Yeah, guess what? This guy is a Mormon porn actor and a meth addict. And obviously, if you've seen pictures of him, it's pretty clear, because especially if you watch the footage, because yeah, that clenched jaw, that dude is a tweaker. Apparently he was also like on an episode years ago on that show. What was it called?
It was an A&E show.
Yeah. Intervention. That's what it was called.
Where I saw people sharing like a screenshot from that, where it's mm-hmm. like after doing meth, he masturbates for 10 to 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I mean, if he used that as a reason to, you know, get better, gets, you know, get past this addiction, but it seems like no. Mm. But along the way, he's just seems like a very awful person whose son had very little chance of growing up to become a productive member of society.
Yeah, and apparently he was like, his dad was abusive, and apparently he was even like neglected as an infant, which if you've seen the guy's, his photograph, you know, when he was in jail, and you'll notice the back of his head is rather flat. That happens because infants are left in the crib for too long on their backs.
Yeah. But apparently his father is also a mixed martial arts coach.
Yep.
Said he offered praise, quote unquote, for violent behavior really early. I told him it works. It is instant and you'll get immediate results.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very much reinforcing that violence is an answer.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it was also his first reaction when he found out his kid was in the, you know, gay club, saying, and then I go on to find out it's a gay bar. I said, God, is he gay? I got scared. Shit, is he gay? And he's not gay. So I said, phew.
Like, yeah. Wow, what a piece of shit.
And not being feared for, you know, the people that his son hurt, if his son's okay, anything like that. Yeah, so also saying, like, we don't do gay, as in Mormons. But also later on, at some point said, I'm so sorry, guys, for your loss. With no regard to politics, it's human life. I'm so sorry. My soul goes out to you. I suppose he said he did not know that his son was non-binary. What does that mean? I got to know because I was horrified he was gay. I was like, oh my God, he's at a gay bar. He's gay. I'm not homophobic or anything, but to find out something like that, I just didn't know. Which is like, no, you're homophobic. Let's see. Yeah, explained that he had not raised his son as a child. He was taken away, not by me. My ex-wife didn't want my son around me. I was an adult film star. Which is like, if that was the only qualification, then things would have been fine, but no. But yeah, that is thing of shitty parenting. Seems like the mom might have been okay, but who knows? Nobody's questioning her as far as I could see.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. That part of it.
Yeah, and unfortunately he was not the only shooter we had this week, because we had another one in Chesapeake, Virginia. He went to a Walmart and killed 5 people plus himself and injured 4 others in the process.
Yeah, so apparently this guy worked at Walmart, had been since 2010. Had some impression that he left a note on his phone suggesting that he had been harassed for a while, to the point that he wanted to get back at the people he worked with. I believe all the people that were killed and injured were other people that worked at Walmart. So it very much seems like a workplace violence kind of thing taken to an extreme. Because, like, remember the people were in the break room. And obviously if he didn't work there, he would not have known, like, those sort of places to get to. So
Yeah,
it seems like there's still doing some investigation of this. This was the quiet one that happened, the quiet shooting, unlike the Club Q shooting. So, yeah, seems more clear cut. Like, he bought a 9mm pistol that morning and some ammo. So very much like a spur of the moment thing. But unfortunately, yeah, number of people lost their lives, and everybody working at that store, they're going to be not great for a while.
Yeah. Ugh. Well. And then in non-shooting relating news, but very much still criminal, reality TV stars Todd and Julie Chrisley were both sentenced to prison time in a fraud case.
Yep. These were stars of the show, The Chrisleys. The Chrisley Knows Best. Followed their tight-knit, boisterous family. But yeah, they got sentenced to various charges here. Let's see. Todd Chrisley, 12 years in prison. Julie Chrisley got 7 years behind bars. He should serve 3 years supervised release afterwards. And the judge also ordered them to pay restitution in an amount to be determined later. Federal prosecutors said the couple engaged in an extensive bank fraud scheme and hid their wealth from tax authorities while flaunting their lavish lifestyle on their show. I believe this was even the end of an episode or something, or maybe even the end of the show, when the wife got a call from the husband saying, like, the feds are after us, get out, you know, that kind of thing. And they just ran off the show. And it's some wild stuff to happen on shows. Obviously, that's gold for a reality show. Like, hey, the stars of the show, they're going to prison. Awesome. Watch the worst moment of their lives. The attorney for Todd argued in court filing she'd not face more than 9 years in prison. Lawyers for Julie said a reasonable sentence for her would be probation with special conditions and no prison time. I guess she takes care of her mother-in-law, her ailing mother-in-law, primary caregiver for that. So that was the potential reason, but I imagine they'll be able to find somebody else. Let's see here. They said the Chrisleys submitted fake documents to banks and managed to secure more than $30 million in fraudulent loans, which will make it really easy to find you. Once that scheme fell apart, they walked away from their responsibility to repay the loans when Todd Chrisley declared bankruptcy. Well, in bankruptcy, they started their reality show and flaunted their wealth and lifestyle to the American public. They also submitted a false document to a grand jury that was investigating their crimes and convinced friends and family members to lie under oath during their trial. Neither shown any remorse, and they have instead blamed others for their criminal conduct. So yeah, those very shitty people seem to not learn anything from any of this. And the sort of people that you would tell be glad that they're going to prison.
Yeah, good. And unfortunately, we got some other awful news from my home state of Georgia. Our Supreme Court just reinstated the 6-week abortion ban.
Yep. So that's that. Essentially, after the state judge undid that or put a block on it for bits. But yeah, I was trying to see if they had a vote number on it, but doesn't really matter either way. But yeah, there you go.
It had been sort of briefly, you know, put on hold after an injunction from a judge, and then they just brought it back. So yeah, unfortunately.
Okay, it was 7-2.
Yeah, because this is Georgia. But finally, our last asshole for the week. Elon Musk is granting amnesty to suspended accounts that haven't broken the law and engaged in egregious spam.
Yeah.
Which basically means all the worst people you can think of are coming back.
Yeah, after Trump, he had a poll. Like, you want Trump back. And it barely won, like, 50-something percent.
Yeah.
And then he was like, no, I got my own platform. I don't need a Twitter.
Yeah.
You can tell who's the one that needed the other more.
Yeah.
Though Trump probably also needs Twitter as well, because I imagine there's much less people on Truth Social than Twitter. He had another poll about amnesty for these accounts. That was at 72%. Imagine because that probably did not get as much circulation, as well as probably bots and all that. But he responded saying the people have spoken. Amnesty begins this next week. Vox Populi, Vox Dei.
Yeah.
And that is a phrase.
People is the voice of God.
Which is not the whole meaning of that.
Nope.
There's another part that's about those that speak this are speaking lies, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the general gist of it. But essentially, like, don't trust the people using that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, great. You're doing it perfectly.
Yeah.
Nobody should trust anything you're saying. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, like Sargon of Akkad has already been reinstated.
Yeah.
A bunch of noteworthy Gamergates and other right-wing people that have been banned have returned. Mm-hmm. That's
Kanye, of course, is back.
Yeah. To nobody's surprise, Elon Musk has been making a lot of white nationalist references. He did an 88 reference mm-hmm. earlier, today or yesterday, whatever.
Yeah.
Of course, the people that knew were like responding with references to the 14 part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, doing everything to say, hey, we're going to turn this into Nazi hell.
Yeah.
I saw somebody that made a good joke. It's like, God damn it, if Donald Trump has more willpower to stay off of Twitter than I do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a whole lot of bullshit there.
Yep.
And here's a good tweet. It's hilarious to watch the richest man in the world successfully recruited by white supremacists the exact same way they recruit teen boys. Targeting yeah. the angriest, loneliest ones they can find and flattering them endlessly while feeding yeah. them talking points.
Yep.
It's like, that's exactly how he got recruited mm-hmm. as, you know, liberals and Democrats criticized him.
Mm-hmm.
And he rejected that. Now he's saying, he's also saying, like, I'm not left or right. I'm the third party, which mm-hmm. is a fascist reference, you know, for somebody who claims he's not
mm-hmm.
A right winger. He's doing everything to say he is.
Mm-hmm.
So great.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah.
It should probably be a good idea to point out that account. So, you know, if Twitter does end up going under, I'm on there, as well. But, yeah, so Elon Musk is a dumbass, and now we all know it for sure.
Well, people but, are slowly realizing it.
Yeah.
Got a Tesla. Totally. It's like, Tesla's a whole big scam job.
Yeah. Fortunately, we do have heroes of the week, and we need to talk about them, especially in reference to our first asshole story. Rich Fierro was the hero that stopped the Club Q shooter and pinned him down until the cops arrived. Now, he was not the only hero that was there. We'll yeah. get to that. But Rich Fierro was a Iraq war veteran who was at Club Q with his wife and family for celebration. And this asshole just walked in and basically Rich's training kicked in and he managed to disarm him and put him on the ground.
Yeah. There's a video at the top of the CNN article. It's an interview with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get through because he very much is feeling the pain of what happened because his daughter's boyfriend
mm-hmm.
who'd been a part of the family for 6 years had mm-hmm. was one of the ones that died, unfortunately. Yep. And you can tell he feels guilt that he couldn't even protect everyone in his family.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't for his actions, more would have been lost.
Yeah.
With that. So yeah, he should feel good, but also, you know, annoyed that somebody violated the sanctity of this club.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about, you know, he was next to his friend behind the bar when he started hearing shots or whatever going on, sort of mm-hmm. dove under the bar. Quickly after that, he saw somebody with a gun walking by and just rushed him, knocked him to the ground, knocked the gun away and told somebody to take it and kick it away.
Mm-hmm.
Had another person named Thomas Jones that helped him sort of just start punching and kicking him as much as they could. They got the pistol away from mm-hmm. him as Rich was just wailing on him and using the gun to hit him, trying to find gaps in the armor to wail at him. If you've seen the jail shot, When they arrested him, he's got bruises all over his face and neck and all that.
Yeah, and that's partly because of the pistol whipping. It's also because when Fierro got him on the ground, there was, quite poetically, a trans woman in high heels who stomped on his head.
Yeah. He said here, I found a crease between his armor and his head, and I just started wailing away with this gun. I told him while I was hitting him, I'm going to fucking kill you, man, because you tried to kill my friends. My family was in there. My little girl was in there. Luckily, his wife and daughter seem to be okay, but obviously they're grieving.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Maybe that's one of the drag performers jumped in, kicked him with high heels that she had on before.
Yeah, it wasn't a drag performer. It was a trans woman. That's an important thing to point out. But yeah, it was kind of a group effort. And he is probably got brain damage. And in fact, if you've seen the videos of his arraignment, he can barely keep his head up because they probably kicked the ever-loving shit out of him while he was on the floor. And by all rights, it should have ended there on the floor because this murdering scumbag deserved far worse. But no, he lives to see a courtroom.
Yeah.
And, you know, the response afterwards has been extremely fiery. Obviously, the queer community is pissed that it came to this and are ready to just stop telling people, you know, just stop saying people, you know, no more of this Mr. Nice Guy shit where, you know, if you come after us, we're going to put you in the ground. And then, of course, you got assholes like Matt Walsh and Lives a TikTok, what's her name, basically keeping the trans drag show groomer conspiracies going.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
saying that this was a groomer event.
Yeah, which, by the way, it was not.
It's a bar. There's no kids there.
Yeah, there was no kids there. Now, I know I said, oh, there was going to be an all-ages show. Do you guys know what an all-ages drag show is? Have you ever watched RuPaul's Drag Race? That's an all-ages drag show. Yeah. Minus, you know, the backstage drama. It's basically clowns. It's basically a form of clowning. Do you not like clowns? I mean, don't answer that because, yeah, I understand why some people don't like clowns. But do you have a problem with clowns going to birthday parties? Because if you have a problem with clowns going to birthday parties, and if you don't have a problem with clowns going to a birthday parties, but you do have a problem with all-ages drag queens singing songs and saying cheesy jokes on stage, then you're fucking stupid. Also, if you take your kids to Hooters or something like that, you're absolutely guilty of quote unquote grooming that you're accusing everyone else of.
Yeah, it's the weird thing that some parents do, like take their kids to Hooters, and it's like that's just incredibly weird because the entire point of that restaurant is dudes being able to gawk at, you know, sexualized women.
Yeah. Also, the food sucks.
Yeah, it's not the point.
Yeah.
They don't invest in good food.
Yeah, it's a restaurant. The whole point you go there is seeing large-breasted women in skimpy clothes.
It's like BW3.
But yeah.
All the waiters and such are women in short shorts and whatnot. And revealing shirts and all that.
Yeah. But, also for the record, it's now kind of come out that apparently Matt Walsh is, on top of being a huge creep, is probably might be a pedophile or an ephebophile, at least, because again, when it comes to all this shit, every accusation is basically a confession. But yeah, just for the record, don't turn over and let this shit just happen. You know, we can't just sit around and let them get away with this shit. We actively have to actually fight them with whatever means are at our disposal. Especially creeps like Matt Walsh. I don't know if you noticed, but you know, do you know what is infamously headquartered in Colorado Springs?
What's that?
The headquarters for Focus on the Family.
Mike Pence's favorite organization.
Yeah, they actually had their sign vandalized this week with saying, you know, their blood is on your hands.
Yeah.
And they're right, because fuckers like this are the reason it happened. But fortunately, leaving all that awful shit aside, we do have one other hero of the week, and that is Mtola, a Democrat who won her election for a full term as the first Native Alaskan in Congress.
Yeah, she had won the Mary Petola won the special election a few months ago, but that was just to write out the rest of this term until I think January. She ran again in the primary election here, or the national election here, and managed to beat Sarah Palin and Nick Begich, as well as Libertarian Chris Bayh in the November 8th election. So yeah, great news. A seat that had been largely red is now blue with, you know, an indigenous Alaskan native woman who seems like she has a good head on her shoulders.
Yeah,
to help out the people in her state.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike, and I believe more people voted for her than voted for, who's the other? Is it the senator? I forget what her name is. That is always brought up when abortion is always on people's minds. I forget.
Not Lisa Murkowski. Is it Lisa Murkowski? It might be Lisa Murkowski.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mary got more votes than she did. Lisa. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Okay. Now, moving on from there, we have admittedly a short list of other things to discuss, but here we go. Because again, most everybody was doing was Thanksgiving stuff and getting ready for that and then, you know, getting over the post-Thanksgiving hangover. But first and foremost, the Biden administration is extending student loan repayment. It's student loan and repayment pause to June 30th, 2023.
Yeah. Basically saying that the $10,000forgiveness plan is they're confident it's going to survive this challenge going through the Supreme Court. So they're just going to extend this as a backup plan. But yeah, it'll go to June 30th, and then 60 days after that is when payments would resume. So, yeah, I got an email from the Secretary of Education chief. It's like, it's like, yeah, we got you, but we got to go through some shit first, and deal with these assholes, basically. But yeah, that's going to be a big deal there. $10,000 to $20,000off for people. It's going to be a big deal. So yeah, we'll have to see how this all goes.
All right. Next up, the largest rail union has rejected the contract, which leaves a deal December 8th. That's right, folks. We're looking at yet another potential strike.
Yeah. So yeah, there's four freight rail unions and a combined membership of close to 60,000 rail workers involved in all this. Some have approved the deal. Eight other unions have ratified the deal, but they could end up being pulled back into the labor dispute because if one strikes, all the others have agreed to honor the picket lines and will strike as well. So this is an all or nothing thing here. Yeah, about 115,000 freight rail workers involved in this. So yeah, two of the largest ones are split on the contract vote. Smart Transportation Division and the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen tried to work out a deal. Let's see, this one gave a 24% raise over 5 years, an additional personal day and caps on healthcare costs, including some modifications to the railroad's strict attendance policies, allowing workers to attend medical needs without facing penalties for missing work. But yeah, that's the railroads called it the most generous contract in modern history, noting that upon ratification, workers would see an average payout of $16,000 in back raises and bonuses. But workers still had to vote on the contract.
Yeah.
And yeah, two were the two largest had their votes tallied. The Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen voted to ratify with about 53.5% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
But Smart Transportation Division had just over 50% voting no, 50.87% voting no.
Mm-hmm.
So still have time to work out a deal here in about a week and a half or so.
Yeah. Keep playing hardball, guys, because remember that that shit doesn't end until you come out of the negotiation room with an agreed upon compromise. You know, yeah. Don't let anybody else tell you differently. Don't let anyone try and guilt trip you. You know, you are the reason that those rails work in the first place, and they can't do shit about it. So stay strong from one union man to another. So next up, we also have this story. So one of the things that's been, for those who don't know, here in the United States, we do technically still have the death penalty here, but some states do it and some states don't. One of those states is Alabama, and they've been having some issues recently because some of the drugs that we use for execution, for lethal injection, are either getting hard to come by or just not really wanting to sell them anymore. And they've botched a couple of these lethal injections, and now they've decided to pause their executions after having a third failed lethal injection since 2018.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on here. I think it's mostly that the injections aren't working. The drugs, I assume, are not working. Part of this is also because no healthcare worker is allowed to do these.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the Hippocratic Oath. They're not allowed to do harm to people.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting untrained people to do the injections, looking for the veins or whatever. So there's that, and part of this is also political. Alabama Governor Kay Ivey sought a pause in executions in order to top-to-bottom review of the state's capital punishment system.
Mm-hmm.
They issued a statement saying she had both asked Attorney General Steve Marshall to withdraw motion seeking execution dates for two inmates.
Mm-hmm.
And requested that the Department of Corrections undertake a full review of the state's execution process.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, it followed the uncompleted execution Thursday of Kenneth Eugene Smith, which was the state's second such instance of being unable to put an inmate to death in the past 2 months, and its third since 2018. Mm-hmm. The state completed execution in July, but only after a three-hour delay caused, at least partly by the same problem, was starting an IV line. Denying that prison officials and law enforcement are to blame for the problems, Ivy said, quote-unquote, legal tactics and criminals hijacking the system are at play here. Which I read through this and I was like, I don't see any evidence of this. There's potentially just blaming people going through the appeals process, which is like, that's their legal right. You can't just sit here and say that these people have no rights in any of this kind of stuff. That's what Republicans like to do, especially when I'm guessing there are probably a non-zero amount of people they've executed that were innocent of crimes, especially for a state like Alabama, where if you're black, they're probably like, I just execute them anyway and create all sorts of evidence in that. But yeah, let's see here. Yeah, they're going to go through this review. Everything else on the table, from our legal strategy and dealing with last-minute appeals to how we train and prepare, to the order of time and timing of events on execution day, to the personnel and equipment involved. Yeah, so let's see. That's about it, really. But yeah, they've had issues with injections because they couldn't find the vein to get the IV working and all that kind of stuff. It's like, that's why these states have problems. One, their drugs are expensive. They're not made for killing people. They sometimes just don't work the right way. You know, don't do it painlessly and all that. Do you want to see more examples? Just watch the Last Week Tonight episode on executions.
Yep.
Because he goes through all that and how barbaric it is at this point to do this versus it being cheaper and pretty much all the time to just house them for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't get more people in there if you got to house them all, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
They got to keep making money, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, if you're making money, you'd want to use the cheapest method.
Yeah. But, yeah. So finally, we come to the two entertainment portion stories of our show. First and foremost, we got some Disney news. Bob Chapek is out as CEO, and the new COO is returning, Bob Iger. Yep.
Yep, they're switching their Bobs again.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like Bob Chapek was fired because he just largely was not popular at all within the company.
Nope.
He seemed to be the person in charge of the parks before he got the CEO job and was disliked because of the way that he handled all of that stuff. The reason they got rid of a lot of talented people that were helping run the parks and working in them.
Mm-hmm.
That put them back quite a bit to rebuild their workforce, as well as just the way he's handled things since becoming CEO. And all that. Do you remember the whole issue with going to war with Ron DeSantis? That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Did not get the board and the shareholders on board with him. So
yeah,
they ejected him for a 2-year stint with Bob Iger. He has signed back on for 2 years for them to find somebody else. So good news for people like Bob Iger and Bob Chapek. But now they're going to be hoping within the next 2 years they can find somebody else that is good to run the company. Luckily, Disney is Disney, so they're not exactly like in bad shape or anything. They're just not making as much money as they would like to. Well, they have these ridiculous new Star Wars and Marvel parks that are charging like $1,500 for drinks and shit like that. Because they can.
Yeah. But so, yeah. And finally, last story for the night, we got a trailer for Netflix's White Noise.
Yeah, this looks like an interesting movie. It's another Adam Driver Netflix movie. Based on a book by Don DeLillo. The film's directed by Noah Baumbach, as well as with Greta Gerwig starring with Adam Driver. It's sort of a dark comedy movie about some sort of, not really an apocalypse, but some sort of like air poisoning thing happening and people needing to evacuate. And this particular family led by Adam Driver with his wife and a bunch of kids trying to, and I believe a bunch of the kids are from other marriages of his. It's like, oh, that's from mom two and mom four and all this, all the kind of stuff. Oh, the good bit where they're yelling at each other as the station wagon's floating down the river. He's like, don't you think we got more pressing things going on right now? Seems like a good bit of a comedic apocalypse stuff and family drama and all that. So that looks pretty neat. That'll be out, I think, December. Where's the date here? December 30th. In theaters this week. So if you want to watch it in a theater, you can check it out now. I think the Knives Out movie Glass Onion is in theaters right now, but will be on Netflix here in the next couple of weeks. So they got a lot of good stuff going on there.
Well, so I do believe we have ourselves a show. Yeah, I admit this show was relatively short this time around, but like I said, the day after day out of Thanksgiving, what more did you expect? Anyway, I'd like to remind you all, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for it in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can possibly conceive of. But, yeah, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up there. We hope you all had, who in our fellow Americans who had were able to celebrate Thanksgiving, we hope you had a good one. We hope you were able to get over the horrible after Thanksgiving food coma that always comes. And hopefully you're not still working it off like I am. Yeah, join us next week. We'll have more, you know, just unbelievable bullshit to talk about, especially considering that we are getting very close into December and the holidays and, of course, the end of the year itself. You know, God, I hope that 2020, you know, ever since 2020, we've all been hoping that the next year will be better than the last. Well, let's hope that 2023 is better than the last three. Good night, everybody.